Nothing to report.
Nothing to report.
Very good. We'll go ahead and begin our open session. Begin with a call to order and pledge of allegiance by Councilwoman Fonzie.
Please join me in a pledge to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Here.
Councilmember Moreno?
Here.
Councilmember Kelly?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Here.
Mayor O'Malley?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Next item is approval of the agenda.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
Motion by Councilman Kelly, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. We now have a proclamation for Autism Awareness Month on our agenda. We have two folks here willing to accept, Dr. Lori Ferguson, and is Dr. Deborah Balke, is she here as well? Okay. I've asked Councilman Sturdivant if he would read the proclamation, and then we'd invite you to come and make some comment.
Yes, so the proclamation is proclaiming April 2013 as Autism Awareness Month in Atascadero. So whereas autism is a complex neurobiological disorder that typically lasts throughout a person's lifetime, it is part of a group of disorders known as Autism Spectrum Disorders, ASD, and whereas autism affects all persons regardless of race, religion, socioeconomic status, or geography, and whereas the incidence of autism in San Luis Obispo County reflects the national rate of 1 in 88, with rates appearing to have increased similarly around the globe. Now, therefore, let it be resolved that the City Council of the City of Atascadero, in cooperation with the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center, affirms its commitment to the important issues described in this resolution by declaring April 2013 as Autism Awareness Month in Atascadero, and emphasizes that each and every individual with an ASD is a valued and important member of our society. Be it further resolved that the City of Atascadero recognizes and commends the talents, abilities, and contributions of the individuals in our community diagnosed with ASDs, and be it further resolved that the City of Atascadero
I wanted to thank everyone for this proclamation. It's a very important way of raising awareness for autism spectrum disorders and the families that are affected by this. New CDC rates, as you mentioned, are 1 in 88 individuals are now diagnosed with an ASD across the nation. And a new study found that 1 in 50 school children is now diagnosed with an ASD. So it's something that is definitely affecting more and more people, whether it's a direct effect or due to a member in your class or a child that you teach or someone that you know in the community. So I wanted to thank everyone here and the council members for this proclamation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next item on our agenda is the consent calendar. Primarily, items that are considered to be non-controversial or routine is we always have an opportunity for council members or the public to pull an item for further discussion. Any council member wishing to pull an item?
I'd like to pull number 8. I just have a couple questions.
Item number 8. And any member of the public wishing to pull an item? Seeing none, we'll go ahead with the consent calendar items 1 through 7. I would entertain a motion.
I move approval of consent calendar items 1 through 7.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilwoman Fonzi, seconded by Councilmember Kelly to approve consent calendar items 1 through 7. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzi?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. We'll now consider consent calendar item number 8, agreement with Caltrans for project study report for the Del Rio Road Freeway Interchange Project. Councilman Kelly.
They established the $104,000 as a not-to-exceed total figure over 2 years that we would be billed for the PSR review. The $26,000 is our initial deposit with them, or initial payment.
So there is a document from Caltrans for the $104,000?
Yes.
Okay, the other question is, I think you have a two-year time period in there. That would take it to the approval of the plans. Do you have any long-term time frame on the project in whole?
Yeah, that's, sorry. If I had a crystal ball that could see out that far and through that Caltrans process, it'd be easier. It's going to be 2 years to get the project study report, the environmental work, all the preliminary design, get us to a place where we can submit construction drawings for the encroachment permit. So. We still think that the total project from the time, you know, we've started to the time the roundabouts would be built would be approximately 3.5 to 4 years.
Okay, fine. Thank you. If there's no other questions, I would be, unless there's public comment.
Yeah, I'll open up. Any other questions by council? We'll open up to any member of the public wishing to comment on this item. Seeing none approach, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council.
Make a motion to approve item number 8 in the consent calendar.
I'll second that.
A motion by Councilman Kelly, seconded by Councilman Moreno, consent calendar item number 8. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzi?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you, and thank you for those clarifications, Councilman Kelly. We'll move on to updates from the city manager.
Yes, thank you, Mayor and Council. A couple quick items that we wanted to update you on tonight. The first is an update on the Walmart project. Last Tuesday, there was a hearing in Paso Robles before Judge Crawford on this item. The city basically defended our position there. Save Atascadero was there as the petitioner. The judge took the testimony under submission, so there hasn't been any judgments issued yet. We understand that it could be up to 30 days, so we're basically about a week into that 30-day process. So as soon as a ruling is issued, we'll make sure the council, as well as the public in general, is informed of that as soon as possible. So we're just basically in a wait and hold mode right now. The Spring Hill Suites, that is the new suites hotel that's proposed out of City Hall. These are the pictures of the finished project here. It is scheduled to open April 1st, which is next Monday. So that's nice. And then, as many of us are aware, there has been a natural gas outage through the business district along Traffic Way here in town. We have Tim Mahoney from Southern California Gas here in the audience tonight. Basically, just give us an update on what's the latest there. And we have some phone numbers here for residential and commercial customers if they need to get in contact with anybody from the gas company. Also, the Southern California Gas Company's website does have an informational page about the outage here in Atascadero. But I'll ask Tim to make some more comments.
Welcome, Mr. Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor, members, council, and staff, and the audience. Timothy Mahoney, I'm with Southern California Gas Company, and there has been an outage here. Thanks for having me out to give you an update on this. If there's any questions you want to know, you know, fire them away while I'm up here. I'll just kind of explain what happened. On Sunday, there was a break in a water line, and as that water pressure rose up, the water line pipe is below our gas line. The water went up from the pressure, hit our steel line, and made a hole in it. And then the water began to take over from the gas that's inside the natural gas pipeline, forcing the gas out. People might have had an area odor there. The consequence to that is the water invades the gas system. So, of course, you know, 911 was called, and there was a very good response from the city folks, the fire department, et cetera. The water department came out and clamped down on their pipe. We came out and clamped down on our pipe. And then the process began to restore the system. And what that means to us is we have to get these large vacuum trucks, and we have to go in and we literally have to extract the water out of the natural gas pipeline system that goes to hotels, restaurants, and, of course, residential customers. So in that process, we have to close down a certain area where this water has gotten into the natural gas pipeline system. To date, we have withdrawn about 5,000 gallons of water from our system. And I bring that number up so you kind of get the idea of the magnitude. That drag that water out, then our other crews can come in. We have to replace all the meters. There's about 600 and some customers that are out. And there's good news in that. I'll get to that in just a second because we've already restored some of our really good businesses here. But so we get the water out. We go in. We give everybody a new meter. That meter is what we call a combo meter, so it has the wireless technology of the advanced meter in it, but it will be read automatically by your meter reader until the time that we can turn that into a wireless read. The people in Atascadero have been fantastic, and you know that. I mean, they vote for you guys. I'm telling you, the folks, we're knocking on doors. People have been very reasonable. We are explaining what we're doing, and the outpour from the community has really been overwhelming. I mean, our folks constantly come up to me at the command center right out here on Traffic Way and Lewis, thanks, right where we're on the lawn of the fire station. And our crews come up and they go, I can't believe it. People are giving me water. They're giving me iced tea. It's just been wonderful. So I want the community to know how much the gas company appreciates that. And we're really, really blessed by that. So the good news is as of tonight, we've been able to get some of the major businesses on board. Carlton Hotel, the movie theater, several of the restaurants back here have been on there, a 30-unit partner, 30-unit apartment complex up here, about 30 different residences. Now, compared to, you know, an outage of 600, that's not a whole lot, but it's a great sign. And, you know, it's amazing. The Fig restaurant folks came up this morning, and, you know, obviously they're concerned. This is a business. They've got employees. They're not making money on when they can't open up because they can't cook because they don't have natural gas. So we talked about it, and I said, you know, we are really going to do our best today to get you up and running. And I just felt so good today when I could call up and say at 5 o'clock, you know, hey, go over there. I got a guy, and he's going to restore your whole house, your whole business. So you get the water out. You get the new natural gas meter in. And then one of our service techs has to go up and knock on your door and say, hi, I'm here to light all the pilot lights, do a soap test if we need to, check out your furnace, make sure everything's venting properly and burning properly. So we give a whole, you know, free safety checkup, if you will, 12 hours a day. We start at 7 in the morning. We close at 7 o'clock at night. So that's kind of the routine that we're going for. I always hesitate, but I'm going to go out on a limb and tell you that by Thursday and Friday, we should have everything completed and wrapping this up. So if not, I'd better show back up here at your next meeting and apologize. But we're working really hard to get to that date so that people have the hot showers and they have the cooking facilities that they need. So that's kind of the update. I can answer questions or go into details or anything you want besides that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mahoney, and I do want to thank you and the gas company. This, of course, was very unfortunate in our community. We all have felt the problems related. Many of our favorite restaurants closed down and inconvenience. But I was very personally impressed with the response of the gas company in our community. As you know, I was calling you on the weekend, and I think you had to interrupt a vacation and coming back and literally in your work clothes. Everyone we've talked to at the gas company has been very responsive, working very hard to get our community restored. And so on behalf of our community, we do want to thank you and the gas company. It's a tragedy. It's unfortunate. But you guys have really stepped up and provided a very good response. So thank you on that. Let me ask if there's council questions. Councilman Kelly.
No, I would just like to go along. I think you did a great response. You know, I haven't heard anybody really complain. They just, you know, something happened and you guys came and fixed it like it's supposed to work. So thank you.
Very good.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate your kind words.
Before you leave, I'm a little unusual. I'm going to open it up. If any member of the public here has a question for Mr. Mahoney, he would step aside. We'd get your question on the record, on the mic, and I'm sure he'd be happy to respond. So just in case there's anyone of the public would have a question. Very good. Well, thank you again, Mr. Mahoney, for coming in.
Okay, and if anyone wants to come out and see the action, we're right over here at the command center.
While you're here, could you review those phone numbers? If folks have a question, who should they call?
Rob and Kobe were the first folks to show up immediately. I followed a couple hours back. That's why my name isn't up there. But Kobe Wells, and he's got his phone number up there. Those are cell phone contacts, and Rob. And I'll give my phone number here. It's 805-689-3033. And that's a third number immediately without sending people to a dispatch center, which is our kind of traditional way to handle things.
Thank you. Councilmember Moreno, did you have a clarifying question?
I was just saying for people that might be listening to this on the radio and not seeing it visually, maybe to read those phone numbers.
Could you?
Sure. A phone number for residential customers, a man named Kobe Wells. Phone number is 559-280-9037. And commercial customers can call Rob Duco, 661-699-5089. And again, I'm Tim Mahoney, 805-689-3033.
Very good. Thank you again for coming out.
Thanks.
And I do want to thank our city staff, too. Though it's not really a problem we could do a lot about, I know our police chief and police department, our fire chief and fire department were very involved, reassuring the public about safety issues, and our city engineer was involved, and our staff did what they could do to coordinate this effort. So thank you for your quick response on this as well. Any other updates from the city manager?
That concludes our report.
Did you want to give a report on just where the city manager is?
I believe he's on vacation.
Excellent. Well deserved. Thank you. Next, we have Community Forum, which is an opportunity for any member of the public to speak on any item not on the agenda. Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Yeah, my name is Pastor Steve Shively from Refuge Church. Came tonight representing the Ministerial Association to pray for the meeting. And I'm also fervently praying for the gas to come back on because I had a freezing cold shower at the crack of dawn this morning. So I'm very fervent about that right now. And laundry from seven people building up in my home. So, but God is good, and sometimes those things make us thankful for what we have, and we're blessed with so much. So before I pray, I just wanted to remind everyone that it is Easter weekend coming up, and this Friday, Our church will be having service out in Sunken Gardens at noon, and short service from noon to about 12:35 or so, and afterwards we're going to have lunch available for everybody who comes out, so come enjoy it. It'll be a barbecue, and the food's always good. And then this Sunday we'll be out in Sunken Gardens as well with a service at 10 a.m., and at 9 a.m. we'll have a pancake breakfast for any who'd want to come out and enjoy that. So sometimes we even have people come by over the last our council and Lord the staff and Lord all the business that takes place here, that there would be a measure of wisdom given from above. Lord, just go before everyone that would be speaking from this podium, Lord, that you would go before the words that they would be said in a wise manner and a manner that would respect others, Lord, and that, Lord, people would be listened to tonight and decisions would be made that would be good for the welfare of our city, Lord. And God, as we are approaching Easter, Lord, I do want to thank you for sending your Son, and Jesus for dying for our sins, resurrecting from the dead. And I thank you, Lord, that whoever calls upon your name would be forgiven and saved and just embraced by your hand, Lord. And so just pray these things tonight in Jesus' mighty name. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor Shively. Welcome, next speaker.
Okay, it's taken me since November to get here for this message. So it's not something I really want to do. It's something I feel I have to do. And I'll start with saying that in God's Word, it states that it's better... dear Jesus, help me. That it would be better for a man to have a millstone around his neck and thrown in the water than hurt a child. Some people will probably say, why hasn't she gone to the police with this problem? I have. And the police, when I mentioned coming here, since they can't do anything about it, they said, good, go. And Kent Kenny is a child molester, a sex offender. I have proof of it here. I know one of his victims personally. And the way he goes about getting the teenagers there and getting them drunk and picking out one to seduce later on in the evening is horrible. This has been told to me by more than one teenager. In November, I turned to the police and I asked them to please keep Kent Kenny away from Tent City and the children in the parade. And it was not done. I know he went to school with a lot of you, and he has a lot of clout in this town, and the young man that told on him quite a few years ago, him and his mother had to move out of town because their lives were threatened. And I'm sorry I have to come here. Stopped. The teenagers did not need to have their lives destroyed. He does boys between 13 and 17. And I know some of his victims, so it really needs, something needs to be done about it. I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Welcome, next speaker, Councilman Clay. Pleasure to have you back with us this evening.
Ex-councilman, by the way. First thing I'd like to say is, Mayor Malley and Council, I was at the Walmart hearing, and Brian Perrick just did an outstanding job of representing the city, and he just shined, so I just wanted to point that out. I mean, if the judge doesn't rule for us, I'll be surprised. But what I came here for is I'm concerned about the 4th of July celebration in 9, let's see, in September 11th, we voted 5-0 to... sanction and support the 4th of July celebration as a city event. And four of you voted, and myself voted for that. And it is the birth of our country. We did have a wonderful celebration there last year. And I'd like to point out some of the things that that happened. We put it all together in about 3 months and from scratch. And the Charles Plattick Zoo was free, and there was over 1,500 to 2,000 people went through there. And I'm sure that that's a carryover. Once kids go there, they're going to ask their parents to take them again. I understand the attendance at the Charles Plattick Zoo is up. The Lions Club provided a pancake breakfast and did an outstanding job, and there was other food vendors there. The ladies at the Kennedy Nautilus did a 5 and 10K run, and it was more than they expected. We had people from all over the county that run, and they did a heck of a job with that. And I got to turn the page. The Elks Club run their little train for several hours, and the kids just loved it. We had the bouncy houses. We had the pony rides. They were a big hit with the children. Andy and Sue McMean had the carousel there. It was just a real hit with all the kids. And Unfortunately, Sue McMean, just a wonderful lady, battled cancer, and she finally succumbed here just recently. So I feel very bad about that. And she was a
good pie you gave me.
It was a little frozen, but you know that's the breaks. We paid three local bands to play there, and the music was really great. I don't think we need three this time, but maybe two or even one would do. Don Cross was there with his PA system, and he played music and announcements, and it was a heck of a deal. There was a ceremony at the Veterans Memorial Building, just a short ceremony, and that could be expanded on. It was a great day. The Galaxy Theater had free movies from 4 o'clock on. They did, you know, some of those old time movies that were just great, and they allowed people to come in free, 12 and under, and they let the parents go in with them too. And so that was a heck of a thing.
Well, we are past time out, Tom.
I'm willing to help, but I can't chair the event, and I'm sure Bob Kelly would help too. Roberta Fonzie said that we need young people on the council, and we got two of them up there now with Brian and Heather. So I think that's great, and because they're more apt to work with young families. Other than the Winter Wonderland, this event was probably one of the best events for young families, and it was a heck of a deal. Steve Martin has all the information in his computer, all the names, everything. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. Tom, what you got to do is you got to appoint a person to chair this. And Al Fonzie, when we had our post-meeting, he agreed to chair the to chair the 4th of July celebration, if the council would have quickly approved it, which we did. So we can't let this event fall through the cracks. And Tom, it's up to you to get a chairman and get this thing going. And it's a beautiful event, and it could be expanded on. And
Councilman Clay.
What's that?
Thank you.
You're certainly welcome, and do your job, Tom.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Mr. Mayor, members of City Council, my name is Chuck Ward. I live here in Atascadero. I'm Marine Corps veteran, but I'm not here to talk about Marine Corps veteran matters. I wear another hat, and that is chairman of the Your American Heritage. Tomorrow we're going to start putting in forms. Friday we'll pour concrete. Electrical lights will be put in, and it's moving forward. We have enough money in the bank now, together with pledges and the ongoing fundraising program, to guarantee 100% that this is going to be completed. We've scheduled a dedication ceremony for July 2nd. This is on the calendar with the Chamber of Commerce. Is going to be one of the wonderful events for the 100-year anniversary. Why July 2nd? Two reasons. Number one, July 2nd is the actual date that the Second Continental Congress approved the Declaration of Independence. And July 4th, we did not want to compete with the other wonderful events that are planned not only for the city but all around the area. And by the way, I totally endorse what Jerry Clay said. Last year's 4th of July was just wonderful. A little background, we have a website. The website is www.mowwvandenberg.org. Just plug into that and it'll tell you exactly what we're doing, where we've been, and where we're going. We're very enthusiastic, and today I want to thank the over 100 plus, a big plus, individual donors and a dozen or so corporate donors and many, many foundations that have stepped up to the plate. These are very difficult times to raise money, and as I'm speaking here tomorrow at a foundry in Pennsylvania, the first plaque of the Declaration of Independence in bronze is going to be poured. All 250 all 350 pounds of it. So if you have any questions, I'm here to answer it. Otherwise, tune into our website. And our mission is to get in and out and not be disruptive to the operation of the movie theater.
Thank you, Chuck.
Well, thank you for giving me this platform.
Well, we'll let you use it now and then. We're going to keep it here. Just kidding. Welcome, next speaker.
Thank you very much. My name's Dana Holland, and good evening, council members and mayor and hardworking staff and the gathering. I know the lake isn't as clean as we'd like it to be. I'm sorry that most of you have never seen it as a clean, usable lake, which it has not been for years. We used to fish and watch fireworks at the same time. But I believe I back a lot of what Jerry Clay says. And I think that tonight, before we all leave here, there should be someone appointed to oversee this. I think that if we can remove a council member and reinstall one in one night, we can surely appoint somebody for a 4th of July celebration. And we don't need this put on the wayside. It is very important to the community. It's not just something so we can say, well, look at Atascadero, we had a great celebration. This is something that is actually for the community members, something for them to go to and safely have a good time and see their neighbors and see their friends and next year talk about what happened last year. And I don't want necessarily for this year to be bigger and grander than last year, but just you have the connections. It's all laid out there for you. Jerry and a lot of people last year did a lot of hard work. It's all there. Just bring what was back last year. It doesn't have to be grandiose. Just bring back what we had last year so we can re-enjoy that. And for those of us who, like me, weren't able to attend, can surely attend this year. And there's a lot more to say, but I'll see you next time. Thank you all.
Thank you. Any other member of the public wishing to speak on any item not on the agenda? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to council. But before closing public comment, I have a letter to read sent to Mayor Tom O'Malley. So we'll enter this in as part of the public comment. Dear Mayor Tom O'Malley, how are you? I hope you are doing well. I'm sending you Flat Stanley. He loves playing video games. He needs a nap at 1 p.m. His favorite food is pizza. Last of all, please take him to the park. Thank you for having Stanley in your home. Please return him in 2 weeks. How many of you know the story of Flat Stanley? Anyone that's had kids in school knows Flat Stanley. And in a second grade, Jacob is in Mrs. Reynolds' second grade class at Santa Rosa. And so I think it's time for Atascadero News to step up, take a picture of the Councilman Flat Stanley, and please send it to Santa Rosa School if you don't get it in the paper. Would you join me with Flat Stanley? Thank you. And so, Jacob, if you're listening in, I'm sure you'll be getting several pictures of Flat Stanley's adventures around Atascadero. We will be talking about events a little bit later in the evening. I know I'm working on about 100 events. We have so many things going on in our community. 4th of July has come up before. I have tried calling a few folks. I tried to check with the Veterans Memorial Foundation. I thought they would be a great group to take a lead in this effort. They were not able to commit to that, nor were several community organizations around our community. And I did check with some of the names that Councilman Clay mentioned. None were willing to take this project on this year. If there is some interest, please, I'm sure Jerry would like to hear from you, but I would too. If you have some interest, and if Councilman Kelly would like to head this up, we would certainly support that, or any other council member. That's something we would consider, because You can't have too many things going on at Atascadero, though it sure feels like it sometimes. We welcome any family-friendly event, and we'll be talking about some of them that we have already scheduled a little later in this evening. Is there any other comment on community forum before we move on to the next agenda item? We have the next item on the agenda is public hearings B1. Now, I understand, Councilwoman Fonzie, you may have to step down on this.
Yes, I do need to disclose I have a conflict of interest. I work for Century 21 Hometown and am a realtor. My brokerage is representing the seller of these products once they're built. So I wanted to ask, do I need to step out of the room, or can I sit in the audience, or what should I do, City Attorney?
You need to step out of the room unless you want to remain and speak to the extent that this would impact your personal interests. So if you're not going to do that, then you should leave the room.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll give you a moment to do so. Has something to say on this project outside of a public meeting. That way, everyone in the community knows if we've received any information that we might help us reach a decision so that everyone has the same information. So anyone that has ex parte communications, I'll go from my left to my right.
Steve, one of the gentlemen who was with Oak Haven, had given me a phone call and an email just explaining his position on this, so that is the only person I've spoken to.
Thank you.
I have none.
Yes, I also received a phone call from the applicant, primarily talking about the background of this project and his position. However, I did not learn any new information that was not already contained in the staff report, and I believe not even an opinion that differs with staff recommendation. Councilman Moreno.
I also received an email a while back from the applicant prior to the staff report coming out that explained the situation, and all of that information is in the staff report, nothing differing.
Thank you. We'll go on with the staff report.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. This item tonight is an appeal of the affordable housing condition requirements for the Oak Haven project. This is a project that was originally approved by the City Council, I believe in 2006, and it was recently heard by the Planning Commission for amendment, and that's the source of the appeal tonight. In summary, the applicant is asking for the City Council to change the master plan of development requirements, which is the CUP for the project. Currently, the project is the CUP has a condition that requires the project to provide deed restricted affordable units in the following amounts. So that'd be 2 very low income units, 5 low income units, and then 5 moderate income units, which we'll kind of refer to as the 2-5-5 option, because there's a conflict that I'm going to explain here. The conflict is that when this project was originally approved by the City Council, there was 2 major entitlements that had to be approved. One was the CUP, which I just discussed. The other was the map. And the map and the CUP need to be consistent. Unfortunately, we had conflicting affordable housing conditions on the map and the CUP. So the approved map from 2006 requires 12 moderate deed restricted center. It's this vacant piece of property here. There's some modular or mobile home parks on both the north and the south side of the property. Basically, it's a big open lot with a number of oak trees. It's kind of up above the road. So that's the project area that we're talking about. The zoning is RMF 20, which is residential multifamily. 20 units the acre minimum. We have what's called a plan development number 26 overlay. That's what implements the master plan or the CUP for the project. So some background on the project. Going back to July of 2005, the Planning Commission recommended approval of the project to the City Council. During their deliberations, the Planning Commission changed the affordable housing requirement on the project to the 2-5-5 requirement rather than the 12 moderates, which is how the staff report was originally prepared. So in August 2005, this was then forwarded to the City Council. the city council. Only three members voted on it. I think we had some conflicts, so we only had three members. But we had a unanimous 3-0 approval of the project. So the resolutions that were approved on the project by the city council that night had the CUP with the 255 requirement, and then the MAP had the 12 moderate unit requirements. So both of them were signed, both were adopted and finalized, and that's the source of the clerical error. So moving forward, the original developer during the recession lost the project. So this project was in foreclosure, and the bank looked to sell it. Last summer in August, staff did meet with a new potential buyer, Mr. Silvieri, who's the applicant or the appellant tonight who's in the audience, met with staff, and we did review the project. At that meeting, we did have the MAP conditions. So we reviewed the conditions of approval. We looked at the MAP. We all noticed or discussed that the project was conditioned with 12 moderate units. Following that, his company, Oak Haven LLC, did purchase the property with the assumption that he had a requirement for 12 moderate units. By December of this last year, the Planning Commission was scheduled to hear an amendment to the CUP. So the applicant is proposing to change the project slightly to reflect some changes in the market and make the project a little easier to build. The majority of the project is consistent with the original 2005. So the applicant obviously was concerned because that was a significantly different financial obligation of the project than what he had assumed when he purchased the project. Staff advised him that staff nor the Planning Commission actually had the ability to make any changes to the affordable housing requirements on a project. Only the City Council could do that. In our discussions, we advised him that an appeal to the City Council would be the best way to get this issue in front of the Council where this could be dealt with, and that's really what we're doing tonight. So staff has actually encouraged the applicant to move ahead with this appeal because we believe that this clerical error, this inconsistency that we have, needs to be resolved one way or the other just to move the project forward. So the appeal, as I mentioned, is to the conditional use permit. So the conditional use permit currently says 255. What the applicant is requesting tonight is that the council change that condition, which is condition number 14, to change it so it would be 12 moderate income units as the requirement for the project. The project is a single family project. So although the units kind of look like multifamily townhomes, they actually are zero lot line units on individual lots. So this is a subdivision with individual lots. So under the building code, this is a single family project. The city has an inclusionary housing policy. It's not an ordinance. It is a council policy, and that requires the 20% moderate income units be provided on single family projects. This is the site plan for the project here. So you can see El Camino Real. There's a series of loop streets, and then these would be the individual zero lot line units. There's a total of 62 single family units within the project. Now, as I did mention, the project is in the multifamily land use designation, so it does have the high density multifamily designation. So under the council policy, an argument could be made either that you could go with the single family designation requirement, which is the 12 moderate units, or the multifamily designation, which is the 255 scenario, which is the issue basically that was debated at the commission back in 2005, which is why we ended up with the two conflicting resolutions. So staff is supportive of the changes that have been made to the project. As I mentioned, the Planning Commission has approved the changes. The only really remaining issue we have on the project is to resolve this affordable housing condition so that the applicant can move ahead with the subdivision improvements. We have a clerical error at this point that just needs to be resolved. Alternatively, the City Council could propose yet a third alternative that's not included in the staff report if you choose, or you could determine that you need more information and just refer this back to staff. So recommendation one is to grant the applicant's appeal, which would be to condition the entire project with 12 moderate income units. So that's recommendation one. The second one is to deny the appeal, and that would then amend the MAP to then also require the 255 affordable unit scenario. So those are the two options before the council. As I mentioned, Mr. Silveira is in the audience here and probably has a presentation to make, and staff would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Before we go to the applicant and public comment, are there any questions by council members? Seeing none, we'll first invite the applicant to share any thoughts and then open up any member of the public wishing to speak. Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. I'm president of Oak Haven Village, Dan Silveri. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members, city staff. We were originally involved in mid-2012 in the project and came to the city of Atascadero, which, having been here in the meeting tonight, I'm glad we did pick Atascadero. I enjoyed the comments and the prayer and hearing about some of the coming events. The main problem that we have with this is that it is a single-family residence project. And we came, before we purchased the land, to the staff and went through many of the different issues with the maps and how we were going to go about with the project. We wanted to make some changes. I think we made significant changes. As you can see from this site plan right here, the streetscape, the landscaping, the walls, we've preserved all the trees on the site. This is going to be a very upgraded project from what it originally was. It was a one-and-a-half bath project on all the homes before. They're now two-and-a-half baths. We've increased the square footage. We've increased the amenities, not only in the site but in the interiors. We're probably all well aware that we're in a different market now than we ever have been in many years in the housing market, although it has picked up some steam again, and we're thankful for that. The original developer had planned on sales prices of $475 to $525 retail, and the project isn't near the project, aren't able to use that moderate rate, and it's literally holding up the project to start. We're ready to go. We're just days away from getting our grading and site improvement plans approved, and we're ready to go to work. I think a few things to mention. The construction costs are between $12 and $13 million. We are using as much local help as we can. We're signed contracts for the first phase of the site work, site improvements, the retaining walls, and the landscaping at $1.5 million with a local subcontractor. The plans are out to bid right now for the rest of the project, all locally. So we're going to make as much effort as we can at providing local employment. That's our goal. I think on the affordability side, we are going to set aside the opportunity for all citizens of Atascadero get first right at the purchase of the property. For the first 60 days, I believe, we'll hold open that opportunity to any member of the city of Atascadero to purchase first. After that, then they'll be open to the general public for sale. I think the project in general is going to be upscale. That neighborhood is going to be probably the start of improvement on that north side of town. I think you're going to see the whole area improve from what we're starting right now. But we've got a few pictures. Warren, could you show just a couple of those shots that I sent to you? This will give you a little idea. You know, you can tell from the different heights on the roof, the different colors. These are single-family residences. The line for the lots run right through, and they are attached in that form. But you can obviously tell this is not an apartment house, and this is not a multi-housing project. This project would, I think it was 20 units to the acre. We didn't change the original design of 62. We wanted to leave the open space available, and those trees that are in there are not artist concept. Those are the existing trees. We have some beautiful oak trees. I think we have 9 trees that we've preserved. Warren, you could show that. That's the original design right there. We completely chopped that off. That three-story setup it didn't work. That was 3 stories with 1.5 bathrooms. And if anybody has a family, I don't think you want to have 1.5 bathrooms. I can only imagine what it would be for young people trying to get kids ready for school with 1.5 bathrooms in the morning or getting ready for church on Sunday. They're all 2.5 baths now. The smaller, and it'll be stacked back, and then we're going to plant that all out. So it'll take a little bit of time to grow in, but we're also putting a lot of mature trees in. We're using a lot of 36-inch box trees, which about the size of this podium. They're pretty good-sized trees to start with. We're really excited about the project. We're really excited to be here in Atascadero, and I just need your help on this difference between the moderate and the 255 situation. Thank you.
Thank you. Any council member questions for the applicant? Seeing none, we'll close that portion. And I do want to make a comment or two before we continue with public comment. And that is to say, and probably in 10 years plus on the council, there's only been two or three times where I've had a pretty strong feeling about a project before going through public comment and the whole process, because I like to keep a very open mind, because you never know what else you're going to hear that might weigh on a decision. But when the few times that I've had some strong feelings about a project, I want to say them publicly before public comment so that you know what's on my mind, because if there's something different I need to know to change my thinking, I want to hear it. But there's a couple principles that I feel strongly about. One is the fact that our process made an error, and I feel responsible that we as a city need to do what we can to correct that, no matter what else is going on with the project. So that's one thing, and I know our staff have allowed this appeal at no cost. Normally there's a cost to make an appeal, but I appreciate staff doing that, because this is something we need to address as a council. Second issue is, I think a lot is referenced about inclusionary housing, and in general, that's a policy I think our council may want to take a look at further, because the economy has changed, things are different, and I think we may have changed our thoughts on that. And thirdly, similar to that, I have stronger feelings than I used to about affordability by design and letting market forces make determinations. So in this area where there's some disagreement between looking at this in a couple different product modes, I think the staff recommendation is a good way to go. So as I say, I normally have pretty open to a lot of issues, but I do feel it's fair to the community that when I have strong opinions early on, I
want a well thought out plan. And so the Atascadero residents who have been here for a certain amount of time can have first shot at that. And the local hiring, I can really appreciate that. In his voice, I can tell he's going to try all the effort he can. What this brings on, though, is infrastructure. And as you can tell, we do have infrastructure problems. This current problem we have, I don't see as a PG&E problem. I see as a City of Atascadero problem, failing infrastructure. I would really like to know what the rest of the infrastructure is doing underground. We're very fortunate that this did not become a catastrophic event, and it's not over yet. So let's just hope all the repairs go properly. But how is this going to strain that portion of the infrastructure? Is that line, or those lines that are going to be feeding this area, are they safe, or do they need improvement along the way also? But the project sounds good, but let's really start thinking about our infrastructure. Or else we're going to lose it and really be having a lot of problems. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll address that a little bit later. Any other questions from the public? Seeing no one approaching the lectern, we will close public comment, bring it back to council. Infrastructure is something that the council takes very seriously. We have imposed full cost recovery on development impact fees, that we plan ahead for what infrastructure is needed, and those are factored into the development price. So any new development pays for any infrastructure that's needed in the future. And we'll remind folks, by the way, it's Southern California Gas, not PG&E, that has some underground gas lines, and it's not really a problem that the city could have dealt with. The water company is a privately owned corporation, is in charge of the water system, and we have Mr. Neal here in the audience representing the water company, and they had a pipe that had a problem, and that led to a problem with the gas line. And if maybe I will turn it over to our city engineer to maybe address that likelihood of a problem, and I'd welcome if Mr. Neal wants to comment as well, that would be fine, but it's really up...
Tom, should that be a different issue than what we're trying to hear here?
I think
we're getting off topic.
Just respond to briefly the infrastructure question.
Code.
Thank you. It's now back to the council for further deliberation or a motion.
Well, I'd like to make a comment on it. I have sat in on a couple meetings with Mr. Silvera, and earlier this evening you said it was nice to be in Atascadero, but it's, I think, nicer that you came to Atascadero. I think I've been in the building business. I think you're a real professional and honest guy, and you're bringing a top-notch project to our city. And I also represent the city on the housing committees in the county and what have you, and part of the recovery for homeless people is to create jobs, which you're doing and trying to do locally, and you're creating affordable housing. So I applaud you for your efforts and what you're bringing here to Atascadero. And if there's no other comments, I would like to make a motion that we approve the part with the 12 moderate housing units.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilman Kelly, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
So that's approving draft resolution A, correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
In short terms.
Number one.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Thank you. We'll take a moment and invite Councilman Fonzie back to the dais, and then we'll go ahead with Management Report C1, which is Planning Commission appointments. I'm going to go ahead and give a little background on this item before we go to staff report. As you may recall, the Planning Commission appointments came up during our strategic planning session some time ago. And one of the things we discussed is, do we want to consider changing the number of planning commissioners? It was decided, no, we're going to stay with 7, which is 5, one appointed by each council member, and 2 at large. Another topic was to consider the term and cycle of commissioners, because we have had some changes. One, we used to have 5 council members with alternating 4-year terms, and then we went to our first elected mayor with a 2-year term. That changes the dynamics on the council. Potentially, you can have a whole new council every 2 years, and so we, in our discussion, felt it was good to align all the appointments to be 2-year terms. We already have that with the mayor. Half the planning commissioners would have a cycle of 2 years. All of our appointments to regional committees are 2-year appointments. All of our other committees, like the design review committee, are 2-year appointments. We were really only down to 2 planning commissioners elected. No one would know that until after we'd already appointed to the at-large planning commissioners, and we thought, well, just to be fair, and since this is the first time that we're changing the rules, so to speak, we didn't want to change the rules after the fact. We decided we would hold off on selecting the at-large planning commissioners until we all decided what we're going to do with our appointments. So at the last council meeting, each one of us decided, which is an independent decision, that each council member would continue with their appointments to the Planning Commission, so there wouldn't be any changes there. So then we decided we would go ahead with that appointment of the 2 at large from the pool of folks we interviewed. That brings us to tonight. However, at that meeting, we had one council member that was not able to attend. And so I've asked our city attorney to advise us on who can participate in the decision tonight.
Well, this is item C1, and the agenda indicates there will be 2 items for the council to take action on. The first one is the selection of new members to fill the directly appointed planning commissioners. And then the second item is the review of the 6 applications supplied by interested citizens for the 2 at large. And since Mayor Pro Tem Brian Sturdivant was not present for the interviews for the at large, my recommendation is that he can vote on the first item but should abstain from voting on the second item, the at large. However, this is not based on a conflict issue, it's based on a lack of information from not having been at the interviews, so he will not need to leave the dais.
Very good. Well, with that information, I'm going to split this item into 2 parts. We'll ask staff to make any further report on item one. We'll take action on that, and then we'll have allow the city clerk to go forward with item two. So is there any other staff information on item number one?
Sorry. Yes, thank you, Mayor O'Malley. Basically, the first thing up here is just the recommendations that are that we just discussed that you mentioned that is in your staff report. The first is to appoint new directly appointed commissioners, because as of Thursday, the March 28th, those terms that are currently there are terminated, and you have to just either reappoint the people that are there or appoint someone new. And as you mentioned at the last meeting on March 12th, you all announced that you were planning on reappointing your existing commissioners, but you actually have to do it. And so it said specifically that you do have to do this tonight on the March 26th meeting or after this meeting, but this was the soonest that you could actually reappoint someone, and that the new people would serve from March 29th through to December 31st of 2014, and then from then on they'd be two-year terms.
Thank you. So this is not an action item. This is an announcement by each council member of their appointee for.
Right. And I've listed your directly appointed commissioners. Those are the five directly appointed commissioners with the council member's name in parentheses that who has appointed them.
Very good. Council members, stand by these appointments?
Yes.
Very good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. We'll consider that resolved.
So then the at-large planning commission, the municipal code states that the planning commission has the two at-large positions, and those are chosen by the majority of the council. So historically you have interviewed, which you did in February. You interview a group of people who are interested, and then you vote, and the majority wins, and whoever has the votes of the majority of the council gets those two spots. They are two-year terms. They serve from December 31st of an even year to December 31st of the next even year, a two-year term going with elections. The two that are on your the two at-large people that you have right now are Chuck Ward and Christian Cooper, and their term technically expired December 31st of last year, but as the our municipal code states, we ask them to continue to serve until you have reappointed them or appointed somebody else. So they have both agreed and have been serving up until now. They also were of the six that you interviewed. So here again is the list of the people that you interviewed on February 19th, and as it lists there, Chuck Ward and Christian Cooper are your current at-large people, and they did. They were interviewed by you on February 19th, along with the other four people listed there above. So then, as you mentioned, you postponed your vote because you wanted to make sure if anyone wasn't reappointed that they would have an opportunity to apply for the at-large position. Since you've all just told me that you're appointing, that we don't need to worry about that. And so we're back to the recommendation there. So again, if you have any questions on any of that, we've gone over it a couple times, I know, so I think we're good.
And go ahead and offer your recommendation based on prior experience. How should we proceed in making our selection?
Well, in the past, many times I've handed out ballots that and it has the list of the six names, and you can circle two, and then you hand it back to me, and I calculate it out, or I can just put the list back up on the screen here. Those six names, if you wanted to just, I could ask each of you.
Some going through this a time or two. But with that, if that's acceptable to council, I'll have the city clerk do a roll call, and you'll make your first round of recommendation for your two at-large planning commissioners.
So you're all okay with using the list on the screen? Okay, because I can hand out a list if you'd like. Councilmember Kelly.
Dennis Schmidt and Christian Cooper.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Dennis Schmidt and Chuck Ward.
Councilmember Moreno?
Dennis Schmidt and Christian Cooper.
Mayor O'Malley?
Dennis Schmidt and Chuck Ward.
Okay, so Dennis Schmidt received four votes, so he is one of the at-large commissioners, and then Christian Cooper and Chuck Ward received two each. So now I'll ask you again of Chuck Ward and, I'm sorry, I just did this again. I'm sorry, of Christian Cooper and Chuck Ward. I'm sorry, that's what I meant. Of those two, I'm going to ask you again just one of those two, which would you vote for? So again, I'll start again with Councilmember Kelly.
Christian Cooper.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Chuck Ward.
Councilmember Moreno.
Christian Cooper.
Mayor O'Malley.
I'll go with Christian Cooper.
Okay, that does make Christian Cooper the second at-large commissioner.
Thank you, and thank all the participants that were interested in serving, and for those that have served, we thank them for their service as well. This is sometimes a hard job, but I think planning commissioner can be tougher. It's a lot of work, and we're thankful for the folks willing to serve in that capacity. We'll move on to the next agenda item, which is management report number 2, consolidated fixed route transit service, and we'll have our city engineer, Russ Thompson, give the report.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. I'll wait for Warren to get the PowerPoint queued up. Okay, tonight we're bringing back the North County Transit Plan and the plan to consolidate transit services in the North County. And the recommendation tonight is that the council has a few last changes as of Friday. Thank you.
This is different than the one in the staff report.
Yes, and I'll highlight those changes. So if everybody has it, on the first page, and again, this is the same document, the section on the left-hand column where it says oversight, that is a new paragraph. And I could either read that into the record or just paraphrase it. But it's effective July 13th, each of the agencies affected will designate people or two people to serve on this North County Policy Oversight and Technical Committee. And that will be a committee that will give the agencies affected control over this consolidated North County transit. So it'll give us an extra layer of oversight and control of the functioning of the consolidated transit service in the North County, in addition to our participation at SLOCOG or on the RTA board. So it'll be an additional group that can focus on the consolidated service so that we can make sure that we're getting the services that work best for us in Atascadero. So it's a pretty easy, non-controversial item. We just agree to participate in that oversight committee.
If I could insert, I think the intention is that local committee would be made up of the two North County supervisors and the two North County mayors. Is that correct?
Yes, I think that is the intent with the support of staff.
And then my understanding is, because I don't want folks to think of it as like an additional bureaucratic layer, how this works in the South County is that the larger boards, which have a larger jurisdiction, defer to the smaller local board to have a little more control and say in the operation. So it rather than having 12 members countywide make decisions about routes and things in the North County, it would be reduced down to the two North County mayors and two North County supervisors.
That's correct.
Thank you.
And then further down under purpose, the third bullet under purpose is an added item, and it basically says that this term sheet will be the platform for a future memorandum of understanding. So tonight what we are discussing is really non-binding. This is just a snapshot in time of the council still supported these, or if there were changes, we could address those before we move on to a memorandum of understanding, which had some legal binding effect to it. So tonight, in approving this document, it's really a work in progress, and it's just going to form the framework for that future memorandum of understanding. So that was added. On the second page, the second bullet from the bottom, it starts with a portion of the overall annual cost savings. The last sentence in that paragraph was added, and it says, in the first year of the consolidation, the remaining net savings would be $276,379, which would be split 47% to Paso Robles and 53% to Atascadero. Now, that was just added to clarify that the net savings will be after an additional Route 9 express route is added for $50,000. So it was just added to clarify that the net savings would be after we deduct the cost of the additional Route 9 express route. In that, though, there is an important provision, and let me get back on track with my PowerPoint. Well, in here, it shows the 47% and the 53% cost savings of the savings or share of the savings. So in this analysis, we've had Nelson Nygaard as a consultant that's acted on behalf of SLOCOG, prepared a report on how these savings were going to be distributed to the transit providers. And it was decided by the group, the majority of the group, I will say, that 47% of the savings would go to Paso Robles in the form of additional LTF money, and 53% would go to Atascadero. Now, at that technical committee, we thought that of the options that were presented by the consultant, that a more representative guide for how those savings should be split up would represent 55% going to Atascadero and 45% going to Paso Robles. It was in their report that's attached to your staff report. It was one of the options that they said was a viable way to split up the savings. And so Mayor O'Malley and myself met with City of Paso Robles, maybe, you know, subject of future consideration before the memorandum of understanding is brought forward. But so that is a difference of what's written in the term sheet and what we're recommending to you tonight. On the next page, the last item that really affects Atascadero under Atascadero's responsibilities, it's the third bullet point from the top. About the second half of that paragraph has been newly added, and it really just talks about how the fare box recovery ratio for Dial-A-Ride will be reviewed as part of this project. It's going to get it, this is the way it would be reviewed anyway. So this is really a clarification that we're going to look at it after the first year, and then we have a two-year time period to make sure that our fare box ratio is correct with the Dial-A-Ride. And really the rest of the terms affected Paso Robles, making them similar to what our fare box recovery ratio is for Atascadero. I didn't want to get sidetracked, but that's the extent of the changes. So it's really the same document, just a few clarifications. So throughout the study and these negotiations that have been going on since May of last year, we have stressed with the technical committee the need for retention of local control, and that's been identified by the formation of this oversight committee. That we end up with cost-effective service. We wanted, if you'll remember last time we talked about this, we wanted to get rid of the duplication of service up and down El Camino. We didn't think that it made sense with respect to the public and serving the public their transit needs. Whatever we end up with should be the most cost-effective transit service. We feel that that is the case with consolidation. The elimination of the duplicate fixed route on the El Camino corridor, as I said, that we would retain control of Dial-A-Ride. So while Paso Robles is proposing to consolidate their entire transit service, both all of their fixed route and all of their Dial-A-Ride, we are just going to consolidate or proposing to consolidate our fixed route and retain Dial-A-Ride. And then a key element is that we protect our LTF funds, and those are the additional TDA funds or transportation-related funds that if you have all of your transit needs met, that the excess LTF fund, so fixed route typically kind of subsidizes Dial-A-Ride. And so by getting rid of that fixed route, you know, our Dial-A-Ride is going to have that much tougher of a task to meet our fare box recovery ratio. So typically it's 20% is the federal standard. So in this agreement, we are proposing to lower that, or SLOCOG is agreeing to lower our fare box recovery ratio to 15%. And historically we've operated between 12% and 15%, you know, on our dialorite. Lately, it's been closer to 12%. So even at that, with that lower standard, we're going to have a tough time meeting that farebox recovery ratio. So part of this is we wanted to make sure that dialorite was made whole. The term sheet includes $36,000 and some change coming back to the city to help make dialorite work. So that is one of the, there's the number, $37,621. That will help us continue to operate dialorite as it currently is. And that's included as one of the terms. So as I said earlier, this is not a binding agreement yet. We'll come back. It is covers a five-year commitment to see these savings. So each year, if savings continue to be realized, we will share in those savings with the city of Paso Robles. And it, the rest of the terms in here sets forth the roles, the responsibilities, commitments by each agency. We will be turning over, and Paso Robles will be turning over title to our fixed route bus equipment to RTA, and those details will be ironed out. So some of the key term sheet elements tonight is that the public is going to see the benefit of an additional Route 9 express route, which right now is a very popular route. Jeff Straw is here with RTA, and he could probably speak to transit needs in the North County. So that's going to be a really good thing for transit users, is that peak hour time there is going to be an additional express run. So that will be paid for out of these savings. And that we stand to realize additional LTF funds. As it was reported by the consultant in their staff report, that's in the report. We are going forward with the assumption right now that the consultant's report is correct, but there is still some concern of what that actual savings amount is going to be. So that's something we're going to work out in the coming weeks, and try to get some of those answers for you. But that wouldn't change the percentage that we share. As I said earlier, proposed the lowered farebox recovery, which is a good thing, and then the establishment of the oversight board. So to kind of wrap this up, in summary, this will just be, again, it's just a snapshot in time of where we're at. We'll come back based on the discussion tonight and the discussion at the city council meeting for Paso Robles next week and at the SLOCOG board. We will then move forward with trying to iron out some of the issues and details and come back at a later date with the memorandum of understanding that will be more binding, or it will be the legally binding document. And we will, like I said, we're going to work with Jeff. I mean, his finance people have identified some concerns. I think they're legitimate concerns that we definitely want to look into more closely. Rochelle and I will be digging down into this, and we'll clarify what our actual savings are going to be. So I think maybe a topic for tonight is if the report says it's $152,000 would be our share of LTF, at what level does it become a concern to the council if it's half of that amount? You know, would we still proceed? So maybe that might be some good discussion for tonight, and Jeff might have, you know, some input on that. So really, I think that's it. We're here to answer any questions. I hope, I know it's kind of a long way, and I apologize for that late incoming term sheet last Friday.
Thank you, Russ. And I think you took a fairly complicated, long process and condensed them down in some very good key points. And I would recommend to council we hold off on our usual questions at this time, hear from Executive Director Jeff Straw, hear from the public, kind of accumulate all of the questions there may be, and then we could go through that. By way of introduction with Jeff Straw, I'd say I've served not only as past president for the Regional Transportation Authority, I've served on the board a number of years, and has really, I think, just runs a good operation, and we appreciate that. We may disagree on some of the topics this evening, but I do appreciate that. I believe he's a very good executive director and has worked well for our region. And so with that, Mr. Straw, please share what you would like with us.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you for the support, too. I do appreciate working with the city of Atascadero. I enjoy coming up here and talking before your board. We are excited that we're kind of narrowing down into something that looks like it could actually work. I do want to share with you that the RTA, we're certainly willing partners in this. We're not somebody who's banging the door down to make this happen. I think there's some benefits, but there are some feelings of unease that I think we all need to feel comfortable with before we move forward with something like this. Russ mentioned that we have some questions about the numbers. It really has to do with how the fare revenues were addressed when the study was looked at. I'm not sure we correctly accounted for that. Rochelle and Russ and I talked about that yesterday. It also, we're looking at some of the numbers and how they were crunched from both cities. And we feel very confident with the numbers that were provided by the city of Atascadero. I'll say that right up front. So we're crunching the numbers right now, making sure it'll work. We feel by the middle of next week we'll have a much better feel for if these numbers really are true. But we're excited to work with this. One thing I do want to clarify is that Russ mentioned the idea of fixed route having pretty high fare box recovery ratio and dial-a-ride having a lower fare box recovery ratio. One of the things we're proposing as part of this this overall plan is an additional express run. We consider those milk runs. Those runs actually make money on an operating cost basis. We carry so many people on those runs. We have standing loads on some of those buses. So they're full. We get a lot of fare revenue from that. That allows us to do other things with the services. And maybe there's an opportunity for us to use that additional milk run to creatively account for how those funds are addressed with the Atascadero Dial-A-Ride. We can book both the revenue and the cost and pull that fare box recovery ratio up accordingly. So those are sort of things I think we can work on to make this to make it work for everybody's benefit.
Thank you. Does any council members have a question for Mr. Straw while he's here? Councilman Fonzie.
Yes, it's my understanding that Atascadero's fare box ratio actually pulls up Paso Robles, which is below the 20%. Is that correct?
Well, not entirely. The Paso Robles fixed route is right at 20% right now. We looked at the numbers from the last year. Our overall fare box recovery ratio is about 16.8%. So we operate in all three urbanized areas, which have a 20% requirement. And then we operate in the rural areas, which have a 10%. So it's sort of this big mix, but when you mix everything together, overall it's 16.8%, and we currently operate about 22% in the entire RTA service area. So we have that capacity to swallow up some of the problems where some of the areas don't have the fare box recovery that would permit them to continue operating without getting penalties from the state.
And also, I think that Mr. Thompson mentioned that we were taking a portion of our funding from the fixed route and helping to fund our Dial-A-Ride, which is very important, especially to our older citizens and disabled. We have a much different city in terms of geography than Paso Robles, much more spread out where people are a long ways from fixed route. We are concerned, at least I am, that this will somehow be cut back or could go away under this plan because we won't meet that 15%. Fare box ratio. Can you tell me what you're planning to do? So, or could we bring this down to 12, which is about where it normally is?
Well, the state requires a 15% for specialized services like the Dial-A-Ride. What I mentioned earlier about taking those milk run revenues and booking them, it wouldn't cost the city anymore. We would just book the cost and the revenue at the same amount to the city of Atascadero. We could effectively pull that up. And I think we should be looking at that regardless if this consolidation happens or not. There are some things I think we can cooperatively do without having a formal consolidation. But as my role, Tom mentioned my experience, I don't consider myself a transit manager. I consider myself a mobility manager. I understand the unique transportation needs in this region. You know, you've got some windy roads where a big bus just can't serve it. The density's not there. The bus couldn't get up there. So whatever we can do to maximize the mobility within the region, I'm committed to doing that. And whatever we can do creatively to make that work, I'm committed to doing that as well.
And if I understand this, this number of this actual monetary number that would be the savings may go up and down every year, and this is a five-year commitment, but the ratio would stay the same, correct?
That's the, yeah, that's the hope. That is what's spelled out in this foundation. Again, this is really just a framework. The MOU would really tie that down and would be a binding document. But yes, that's the intent, is to keep the ratio the same.
And I've had some responses from members of the public concerned that they may be losing some bus stops or a reduction in the service. Is that going to happen, that we want to keep our local control and keep those stops the same as they are now?
And that was a discussion that came up. I think Rochelle brought that up to Russ and to Valerie and I. Are up and down the El Camino Real corridor right now, and we removed the number of buses that would operate on a daily basis because we wouldn't be following each other. But in terms of access, it would still have the same level of access to the bus. The bus stops would not be reduced.
And final question, the previous report did say 55% to Atascadero and 45% to Paso Robles. Are you personally recommending the 47-53?
No. I do not have a dog in this fight, and I think Ruskin will attest that we're really just providing technical input on this. I think that's just, if what's included in your report here on the back of your report is a number of different scenarios that were developed. And it really is sort of sausage making right now. I mean, there has to be an agreement between the elected officials on what actually can work here. And, you know, in terms of the total dollar amounts, the difference between 55 and 53, it's a few thousand dollars. And again, we don't have a dog in this fight. We don't gain anything whether it changes or not. We would still provide the same amount of service. We'd essentially become the contractor to your city to operate the service.
Thank you.
Yes, Councilman Kelly, then Councilwoman Moreno.
Could you explain to me the addition of this express line, how that actually works?
Yes, it'd be a round trip, so we'd have one morning trip going into San Luis Obispo in the morning and then additional coming back. Now, $50,000 is a high amount. When we did the budget making on this, we wanted to be very conservative about it. The actual cost will be less than $50,000.
What makes it an express route? Do they stop at all the bus stops, or are there other designated stops?
What we talked about as part of this is skipping the Santa Margarita area, likely just leaving the Bordeaux area and then getting on the freeway and zooming in, just to make it as direct as possible. There still would be the existing services that would provide that Santa Margarita, you know, along El Camino Real all the way into Santa Margarita.
Would be the capacity of that bus? And you think it would be full?
For the new ones, yes. Like I said, we've got standing loads right now, and I think we're dissuading people from riding the bus because they've had a pretty uncomfortable trip coming over the hill. So we're pretty confident. We know right now we need to do this. Unfortunately, the challenge is we don't have buses today. We've got buses on the manufacturing line starting next month. We'll get some new buses coming in. We'll just maintain the older buses they're going to replace in our fleet to be able to provide this service.
What do you think the capacity would be, say, on the newer buses? Are they like 50, 60 people? Or?
No, each bus will seat 39, but we get up to 55 people on those buses. Mm-hmm. We really cram them in.
Going to Warden, would that affect our greenhouse toolbox?
To put in the term sheet that it will never exceed 50,000 or likely go below.
Well, I think it might be best. For the first time, RTA this year is doing a two-year budget. And part of it is so that the cities have a better idea of what we think we're going to need for the TDA needs for the region, but also because of this consolidation, this idea. We did a consolidation of the county services this year. So in fiscal year 12-13 is the first time we show in our budget a separate column for the county services. We propose to do the same thing for the North County service, so you'd have a good idea what the cost would be and then extend it for 2 years. We're also developing a capital improvement program, which we haven't done in the past, to look at where bus replacements, bus stop improvements, those sorts of capital projects can be identified to give you a better snapshot of where we believe that the cost will be. But in terms of ever getting above 50,000, of course, someday with escalation of with inflation, it'll increase over time. But I think you could look at our trends over the past few years and see that we're at, or in a lot of cases, below the CPI for costs. We do our best to contain costs as we can.
So within this five-year agreement, we could say that it wouldn't, not just in the first year, but it would not exceed in any year that 50,000 during the term of this agreement. Would that be?
I think it'd be difficult for us to do that just because of costs. I'll know better next week what we really believe that cost is going to be, because now we're getting our numbers, we're crunching, okay, and we're getting all that stuff together. it'd be hard for me to commit to say that during a five-year period it won't. If it comes in at $49,000, and I'm picking a number, with inflation, of course, it's going to go over $50,000 in a five-year period.
Okay.
But I think the other thing that we haven't looked at is booking the fares, because that's the operating cost. We haven't looked at the actual subsidy, and we'd only charge the subsidy, which is the operating cost minus the fares. So, you know, again, we haven't crunched those, and again, it's kind of sausage making, but once we put all that and those numbers together, we'll have a better feel for it.
Okay. And then this is just some clarification. Either you or Mr. Thompson, I'm sure, could help me with this. The Dial-A-Ride, the 38,000 or the 37,621, but 38,000 rounded, I guess, reduced to help with the Dial-A-Ride. Exactly how does that, how is that working? What is that doing?
Well, right now, when we provide transit service, I mean, we have a certain percentage of staff that is dedicated towards transit, whether it's fixed route or Dial-A-Ride. And so we can't have two-thirds of a person or three-quarters of a person. So that 37,000, when we get rid of fixed route, will make our transit funding.
Is the fares. So that denominator gets larger, causing a smaller percentage. So it does affect it, and that's why we think we're going to end up around 12%.
Well, so maybe I'm misunderstanding. The 38,000 isn't an actual number that's coming to us then? I thought somehow that was reimbursing us.
It is
that,
also
so being added to the numerator.
It is also coming back in the form of TDA funds. SLOCOG and Florida and all of those do realize that those costs are shifting. They're not an actual savings.
Okay.
And so what they do is they take the total savings and they say the first 38,000 of that goes to the city of Atascadero in the form of LTF funds. So basically they're going to help us keep those funds. We're getting the money, but we're also causing it. That revenue doesn't come into the fare box calculation.
So it doesn't
problem.
Help on the numerator
yeah,
side.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes, my concern also is with for our Dial-A-Ride system, as both Councilmember Fonzie and Moreno have mentioned. When it comes to the Paso Robles in this term sheet, you're looking at Paso Robles Dial-A-Ride being taken over as well as their fixed route. Have you given any thought or looking at if you were to do that, incorporate our Dial-A-Ride in with our fixed route in that same scenario? In other words, is there been any looking at the numbers for that? Would that be, because 12% sounds like it's going to be kind of hard to keep. So in reality, if we're going to be putting money towards it from this agreement, and then we're also not going to be able to meet our fare box, chances are we're really looking at Dial-A-Ride either going under or a different form. So
I think it's worthwhile for that discussion to happen as part of this term sheet discussion. Again, this is sort of a framework, but I think those concerns are loud and clear to me. I think we could bring that back to the committee, the steering committee, and say this is a real concern for us.
Thank you.
And I might add, too, if we come in under our fare box recovery ratio by a couple of percent and we would have to pay in to make Dial-A-Ride whole, say we had to pay in $10,000 to make Dial-A-Ride whole, we would still be getting that additional LTF money, you know, in addition to what we currently get. So if as the report proposes, we would be getting $150,000 of additional revenue, even if, you know, Dial-A-Ride came in a little low, it might be well worth it to.
And you have 3 years under state law before a penalty phase would occur. We could make the case very strongly that this is a new service. The clock starts over again, and you've got 3 years before the penalty would hit you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. And as soon as we get rid of the echo up here, additional burden on us because we're left trying to continue meeting the service for our community. And another thing that occurred is with RTA attempting to maximize their service, they began doing a duplicate service down El Camino, which is right where we were providing service. Now, that's a plus and a minus. The minus was is that was taking customers essentially into their system, and that further dropped our cost effectiveness. So the reason we're having this discussion is we had two things occur to us that you might say we didn't initiate, and that has made it a little tougher for us to take a look at this. I think, quite frankly, it has been a pretty small but a very good service we've been able to provide in the past. And one thing we like about local control is that our service delivery has been very user-friendly. I know our own dispatch service knows our customers by name. If someone isn't at a stop they're usually at, we follow up and make sure we get some good service for especially some of our elderly and folks with medical needs. So I think that local control piece has been important, why we've worked at this so far. Of course, we want to eliminate duplicate service, but we didn't actually initiate the duplicate service. I think it's very important to us to maintain the dial ride for all the reasons that you have identified. And I think another thing that's important to us is traditionally we've done a pretty good job of meeting our transportation needs in our community, which meant that we could use some of those savings from LTF to go to roads. We're one of the few communities that's, even in tough times, has put money towards local roads. And as you know, every time we've asked our constituents what's a priority, it's been local roads. So these are some of the things that we have given some thought to. And I think we now have to look at, well, what do we do at this point? I think the best phrase Russ came up with that I like is it's a snapshot in time. We're not making a decision tonight that's going to have any lasting impact. We're still in the negotiating phase. I think we get to kind of offer our opinion before Paso Robles City Council. Now, when we initiated this, when we originally participated in this, and there was some reasonable discussion about why we would want to consolidate, we didn't come up with the numbers. We heard from San Luis Council of Governments that there was probably a very large less. Okay, still sounds good. Then it got a little bit less, and then the percentage that we would receive started shrinking, and of course that started changing our thinking. We recently had a study that came up with some numbers, and then staff from both agencies and both cities looked at this and came to a conclusion, well, 55-45 seems reasonable. I felt it ought to be more, but in a spirit of compromise, I said I could support that, which is really what we had before us tonight. Here's a reasonable guess of what the savings is going to be, and here's a ratio. And I think that's really what we're voting on tonight is, even though it's flawed, it's kind of an opinion that snapshot in time, yes, I think we could support a 55-45 ratio of some amount of savings. Now, obviously, this isn't going to be set. A lot more discussion is going to occur. But there comes a point for me where if that savings is below a certain number, and if a higher percentage is attributed to us and we're not getting our fair share, there comes a point where we have to say maybe it's not worth it. And so I think that's kind of where we're at. My recommendation is simply to adopt what staff's recommendation was before us when we had the last iteration of numbers, just to confirm that I think it's a reasonable percentage of sharing and a reasonable amount of savings that's certainly worth pursuing. And we're just sending a message that if it gets much farther away from that, we're going to have to look at, is it really cost effective? And we just have to look at it from staff's recommendation. Did I oversimplify anything, Russ, or could you clean up anything if I misspoke anywhere?
No, I think that's pretty good summary.
Okay. With that before us, further discussion or possible motion? Well, it looks like we may have. I'm going to go ahead and start and go with each council member, Councilwoman Moreno, and any questions or discussion, go ahead.
I'm just being a bit detailed here. The recommendation is that we approve the term sheet. And so in the term sheet is 5347, not 5545.
Well, that's what was added to us. That's not in our...
Well, the staff report is one thing, but the staff report says the term sheet, and the term sheet in the staff report and this term sheet both say 5347.
Let's ask our city engineer to clarify. That is,
you're correct. That is what's in the term sheet. Staff is recommending as the same percentages that...
TPA on board. Any other number questions for us?
No, that's it right now. I guess being that this is, like you said, kind of evolving, I'd be more comfortable if we had what is considered more solid numbers, as Jeff was saying that, you know, would be had next week. But because we're not making any final decisions,
right,
I can feel comfortable moving forward. But I am anxious to see those more final numbers.
I think what we're saying tonight, that if it's not 55-45, we're going to look at it with a lot more scrutiny than if it is. Councilwoman Fonsi.
Yes, I agree. If it's not 55-45, I will not be voting for it. Also, Mr. Straw did indicate that additional money could be put towards Dial-A-Ride from an additional express line. I'd like to have something in this to reflect that as well.
We'll come back and ask our city engineer to see if he can make recommendations on that. Councilman Kelly.
I, like Mrs. Marino, like numbers. I want to see some more numbers, and I feel very strongly that the Dial-A-Ride program stay intact in our town to service the elderly, the disabled, and what have you. I think it's a very important component that makes Atascadero what we are.
Thank you.
I, too, am concerned about the numbers and Dial-A-Ride, and I would like to see that we keep local control. That's very important, as much as possible. So with that said, we have consolidating is good, saving money is good, money for roads is good. I mean, it really is. There's a lot of good components in here. So you referred to it as sausage making. That's a great term. So, sometimes you just got to start somewhere and get things going. So it's a good place to start, but yeah, we have to make the changes about the 45-55 on the term sheet, things like that, and let's go forward with that. So I agree.
That's well said. We're offering a snapshot in time. Let me ask if staff could kind of reiterate to us, if someone is prepared to make a motion, what that is included. So we know at least we certainly aren't doing anything that's a final decision, but expressing our intention, is there a way that we can word this in staff's opinion?
I think it could just simply say you support the term sheet with the exception of or recommend changing it from 53-47 to 55-45, and that the staffs work together to further refine the actual savings dollar amount and report back to council.
Sounds pretty good to me. A question from Councilwoman Fonsi.
Okay, I just want to reiterate that this Dial-A-Ride in this, if it's going to be revised.
So I assume that staff can also represent, this is again a snapshot of what we are wanting to see, but there's a lot of intent that these are the negotiating factors, that if a proposal comes back to us, these are things we would need to see. For example, Dial-A-Ride protection. So I think, does staff have enough direction with, as you stated, a possible motion that we could go forward with the next iteration?
Yeah, and I think that's an important distinction. So the three would be the 55-45 split, the further review of the net overall net savings, and a proposal to have the consolidated fixed route subsidize Dial-A-Ride to the extent feasible to meet farebox recovery.
Perhaps we could say something so that our ratio that we're currently subsidizing Dial-A-Ride doesn't exceed the current level or percent. We want to stay whole with what we're doing now.
Yeah, to meet the 15%.
Correct.
Any other additions? I think we are refining this and improving as we go. So any other thoughts council has to share? If none, I would entertain a motion.
Oh, I will move approval of the term sheet with the three items of changing the percentage from 53-47 to 55-45 to our desire to see some firm numbers in the near future about the savings, and also whatever efforts can be made by the county to help keep our RTA, the Dial-A-Ride 15%, keep that whole so that we're not losing on that.
It would be through SLOCOG.
Okay.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilwoman Moreno, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonsi?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Good. I want to thank staff and council. It's kind of a can of worms, tough program and problem we looked at, and I think talking it through helped us all to understand it better, and I think all of your input made it a better recommendation, so good job. We'll move on to the next item, number three, stormwater regulations update, and our city engineer, Mr. Thompson will have that again.
Yes, thanks. Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. You didn't have a staff report in your technical advisory committee level working through some of these standards as the regional board has developed them. So tonight he's going to go through a PowerPoint that kind of brings us up to speed on where we're at. And you're going to see this stormwater issues back before you probably every 2 months between now and September as we continue to ratchet up meeting these new statewide standards. So with that, David's going to take it away.
Thank you, Russ. I want to talk tonight just briefly about the stormwater standards. A lot has happened in the last year, and I want to bring council up to date on that. So the summary is we're going to talk about the new drainage standards the city has to adopt by September 6th of this year. The state also adopted a new municipal stormwater permit that covers all the city's storm drain systems in town. I'm going to talk about a timeline for implementation, and also this is just a receive and file report at this time. Community impact, there will be an impact to the community. This changes our drainage design methodology that we currently use in the city and incorporates water quality as well as water quantity. And we also have to wrap in our existing flood control requirements. This applies to new and redevelopment projects within the city. The statewide permit also covers existing businesses that may have an impact to stormwater. It also could affect the downtown area. Currently, the downtown area is exempt from stormwater requirements for retention on site or any detention on site. We're going to work hard, though, to minimize or eliminate those impacts to the downtown area. Also, there's a time and cost. The time for staff, city staff, will be higher than in years past, and also the cost will be higher because we'll be spending more time implementing these requirements. There will also be time and cost requirements for developers who have to implement these standards on their projects. So a little background. Back in 2000, the city was required to develop and adopt a stormwater management plan. Fast forward to 2008, the state, as part of that, decided that the city needed, all cities in our area, needed to adopt new, more stringent drainage standards. So in 2010, our swamp was adopted by the City Council and subsequently approved by the Regional Water Quality Control Board. And now in 2013, there is alternative compliance. There is light at the end of the tunnel. We'll be working on different methods to lessen the impact on dense areas of town and giving developers an opportunity to do projects outside of the dense areas, more developed areas. There's also, we are also allowed to do an in-lieu fee, but we're not proposing that. We're just keeping all our options open at this point. And also, as I mentioned, implementation will be by September 6, 2013, according to the Regional Water Quality Control Board. Now, the new municipal, changing gears back to the state, municipal stormwater statewide permit was adopted February 5, 2013. City staff was involved in that. We were part of the statewide stormwater coalition as cities up and down the state who worked really hard to get common sense requirements in this new permit. This new permit rescinds our city stormwater plan. So the plan I talked about that we adopted over that 10-year process now goes away. The city has to take the new permit, our old swamp, and see where they match and don't match, and submit a new report to the state by July 1st. So we're going to do some more work. Staff is really confident that what we have matches what the state, pretty closely what the state has, and we're going to work to make sure that we don't get a lot of requirements for the city that we really toughen it up that don't make sense. We want to really make sure we have common sense requirements on the city. That guidance document is due to the state on July 1st. So we've got two different due dates for two different plans. So staff is looking at implementing these different processes. And first thing we've done is we've developed a request for proposal for different engineering firms to help us develop these two documents, the new guidance document for the state and the new stormwater drainage standards. So on April 23rd, staff plans to come back and provide an in-depth staff report and presentation on these standards and provide our recommendation of a consultant to help us develop these plans. Our next date would be June 25th, where we would provide council and the public an opportunity to weigh in, give us their comments on 75% plans, and also get council input on the guidance document, which is due July 1st. The final plan would come back to council on August 13th, and what makes sense for us. We're going to come back with a request for funding of these two reports on April 23rd. It's going to be a public process with lots of public input, and we would like to really get a lot of public input on this because this is going to affect developers and the public. We plan on implementation by September 6th, and I'd be happy to take any questions that council may have.
Questions from council. Councilwoman Fonzie.
You said this is going to cost more man hours and more money. Do we have some idea what this will be?
Not at this time, but staff will be looking at that real hard in the next 6 months to determine how much of a impact it is.
Is there any additional money coming from the state to help pay for this?
No, there's not.
Thought I could ask. No grants out there?
Nice try.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturtevant.
When you say implementation by September 6th, what exactly does that mean?
The state has told the city that we need to adopt a stormwater drainage plan, new drainage plan standards, by September 6th and implement them. So projects that come in on September 6th and thereafter, these new standards would apply to those projects.
So nothing prior, nothing that's in the works, nothing. It's just everything new after that date, only on specific types of projects.
That's a good question. So if we have an applicant that comes in and does not have a ministerial approval or a conditional use permit issued by the city by September 6th, then these would apply to those projects. But projects that are already approved, say our dormant development, would not be subject to these requirements.
Thank you.
Councilman Kelly.
Yes, Russ, some time ago, maybe over a year ago, there was some discussion about having a city design retention plan, a basic plan for a simple construction. Is there any plans to maybe do something like that for the level one, level two items that would, you know, keep the cost down for the city and streamline the process?
Yeah, we've been using a kind of a standard, simple plug-and-chug kind of basin plan for small projects if somebody was doing a small addition or adding a detached garage. So that's our goal, would be to have very easy, simple, simply applied new standards. We would definitely incorporate those.
Great, thank you.
Councilwoman Moreno.
I think it was David said it might apply to downtown or it might not. What determines whether or not it the downtown?
Which fits the character of that area. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Other council questions? I'll open it up to the public. Any member of the public having questions or comment on this receive and file item, because we won't actually be voting on this tonight. Seeing no one approach, we'll close public input. And again, I would thank staff. We're very fortunate to have two very good engineers on staff. David Athey has worked in this area, and I see him giving us the best of both worlds, very sensitive to environmental needs, and we're, I think, doing a good job in our community, but you're also seeking to protect our community and be as cost-effective as we can, too, and I appreciate your work. I know you put a lot of time in on this one. I think this is just receive and file. We thank you for that information. We'll now move on to council announcements and reports. I will start at my left and work through to my right on anything that's your activities you'd like to report on, and then we'll go on to committee reports. Councilman Sturtevant?
Well, I don't have any city related, but I can tell you that Diablo Canyon is back up and making power again, so I'm very glad about that. It's been a lot of work for this last outage, so
yes.
glad that it's over.
I just have a committee report.
Okay. I will go ahead on a number of items that are coming up, and certainly want to see Craig from Atascadero News. Thank you for being out here this evening. I've got some things to give you, some inside stories. So We do want to talk about our Cycle de Mayo event coming up. As you know, we've kind of become famous in Atascadero for doing some really good family-friendly bike events, primarily because I'm involved and I like to eat. So last year we did Bike to Bites. Nothing like getting 300-plus kids out when you offer free root beer, free round-table pizza, and a free movie at Galaxy Theater. A lot of good business input. But what we started with is not to do an event for, well, like Craig, who's a real bicycler, but for our kids in our community. Especially, we started in the schools and did a lot of safety training in the classroom and then moved on to kind of a family-friendly bike ride. And I showed my bicycle expertise because I started out leading the pack and for about 3 seconds, and then they all passed me by on the way to Galaxy. And we're going to do that again this year. This year, again, I wish Bike Month were July. We could maybe solve that in dinner. There will be a charge for that. But we have 3 or 4 mariachi bands that we'll be playing for free around the lake, and it's going to be quite a nice event. And the Latino Outreach Council has put together that portion. So we've really got, as usual, a lot of folks in the community coming together to put together a nice event. And I will pass on to the newspaper some contact names for if you'd like to follow up with some of the event organizers on that. I do want to also mention that we have our Mayor's Winemaker Dinner coming up again. It's a debate on how many times we've done this. So we're just going to go with it's the Centennial Mayor's Winemaker Dinner. And I always emphasize it is not Mayor's possessive, it's mayors plural. The apostrophe is after the S. Everyone that's been a mayor in Atascadero comes together and helps make this a fun event and also raises some much-needed money for things needed in our community. As you know, we've teamed up with the Kiwanis for the last couple of years, and they have rebuilt our bandstand in the lake. Well over $100,000 raised on that, and Kiwanis has done all the work, and we're going to see that in action this summer. This year, we are devoting a lot of the money to help improve the pavilion, which is the first year I did a winemaker dinner. First year I was mayor, we raised money to do some repairs there, much needed. And what we're going to be able to do is make some changes that will benefit every community group that uses the pavilion by basically doing some things different in the foyer. It's going to be allowed be able to increase some seating capacity and uses. And we're also going to be helping out on youth scholarships throughout the community. And then Kiwanis is up for looking at other big projects in years to come. We're going to really raise the bar this year. It's going to be bar, literally. Very nice winemaker dinner, and it'll be with a wine pairing. We have wineries from all over participating, and you'll see information coming out on both of these events through the Chamber of Commerce. And we could talk more about events, but those are the ones coming up next. I'll move on to other council reports.
Just reports on the activities of our different committees we're on?
Yeah, well, we'll get to committee reports next round. If there's any other extracurricular activities you want to report on, we'll just do
that
now.
None for me.
We'll go back, cycle through for also committee reports now, starting with Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant, and we'll just work our way through again.
Well, coming this next week, I have my community and housing committee.
So that we can get these houses online and provide the housing that the homeless need. They still don't have the final count in for the enumeration, which is the count of the homeless people within the county. They're telling us that the number will probably be less this year due to different ways that the government want to count the people, although I think we all agree that we see an increase in the homeless people within our county. One of the highlights of the meeting, I thought, was Dana Cunningham, who represents the veterans here in the county. They're sponsoring a stand down, a Veterans Memorial stand down at the Veterans Memorial Building in San Luis on May the 18th and 19th. And at that, they're going to try to gather all the homeless, as many homeless veterans as they can in the county. They'll have a tent down there where 40 of these homeless veterans will be able to sleep overnight. They'll be providing showers for them, and they'll have medical services there to help them out with any of the needs they have. They'll have barbers there to give them haircuts. They'll have counselors there to help them with some of their problems. there'll be representatives from the judicial part of the county to maybe clear up some of the problems they have within the judicial system. Also at the HSOC meeting, representatives of ECHO, the North County Connection, and the Griffin House are there. And I have made contact with representatives from those three people and our police department to try to go out and identify some of these veterans that are within our county. And if we can, I would hope that maybe in the future I could come back to the council, if needed, to see if we can take one of our vans and maybe provide some transportation down for these veterans that seem to get forgotten along the line and help them out. Mr. Cunningham was saying the amount of veterans that are coming back homeless is on a significant increase because a majority of them are serving numerous combat tours over there, and they've spent years living in a hole under just horrible conditions, and this is what they come back to. So one of the statements that I heard down there that really impressed me is that every veteran should be sleeping behind a closed door at night. So I hope we can help our veterans out. So I look forward to getting involved in that, and I hope I can get the support of the council to go along with that program. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And what you mentioned, that's several committees you're actually a member of working on, and you've kind of pulled together across all those boundaries some extra effort for our local veterans. So thank you. Faye would have it. Also, Councilman Fonzie will be rotating in as well. So we'll have those two areas. Certainly Atascadero well represented. We've heard a lot from Regional Transportation Authority and SLOCOG this evening. Don't need to expand on that, but those of you may not have heard earlier, we did have a photo op up at the Transportation Center that was just completed, and we're very proud of that in Atascadero. Again, nearly $1 million of funding from the San Luis Council of Governments our city was able to secure to get that hub in our community. And very nicely designed, and I thank Russ Thompson again for leadership on that.
Tom, I got a question. Go ahead. I think 6 or 9 months ago, you and I sat in on a meeting regarding the recycling center here in town. Do you have an update on that?
Not as entirely much as I would like, other than, as Councilman Kelly said, we had a little scare a while back. There's complicated rules about doing recycling centers in communities, and we had one through the Waste Alternatives office here in town, and there was thought of closing it down. Well, we all heard from constituents some concerns about that. We raised that issue with the company managing that. We're able to secure it continuing operation for some time, and we are negotiating with the state on trying to change some of the rules of how that is done, and the Integrated Waste Management Authority is helping us try to reach some better ways to provide that service in the future. So no immediate risk of it stopping, and we're trying to find some ways to do it more cost effectively in the future. And that is something that will be coming up for us to review probably in another 6 months or so. Many years ago when I was on council earlier, it came up about the contract we have for waste services in our community. And they tend to keep a 10-year evergreen contract. It always keeps out far into the future, and that helps companies provide for some pretty big fixed costs. However, it kind of puts off us being able to negotiate some changes. So some time ago, I and other council members said, let's let this wind down, and that was a number of years. We're now down to only 2 years left on the contract. So obviously folks are very anxious to get a new contract, and it will be an opportunity for us to really, one, educate ourselves on what the options are. It will give us a chance as a community to see just what does.
In terms of committee reports, I did go to a LAFCO meeting. Director David Church was again confirmed as doing a good job as director and will stay on. One of the more interesting things that happened was the legislation review that spoke about spheres of influence for mutual water companies, that the LAFCO board was heading towards endorsing that policy. I came up and stated that I didn't think it would go over very well in Atascadero, particularly when spheres of influence for the city are much different than the boundaries for the mutual water company. So they backed off and did not take a position on that one, but it is coming up just for your information, Mr. Neal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, it's budgeting time, and Rochelle is working hard at it. I've seen the spreadsheets, and she really has it down to a science. I have to, hats off to you. You do a great job with that. So she's put together a lot of the preliminary information, and the department heads are right now going through their budget for the coming years. It'll all come back to Rochelle. We'll get the finance committee together, and I'll keep you posted.
Thank you. Ends our council reports. Any last action items or discussion items council members or staff would like to bring to anyone's attention? Seeing none, we are adjourned.